The beginning of the Parsha of Vayishlach. Let's just read the first few psukim. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lufanav Aleisav Achiv. Yaakov sends Malachim to Esav. Malachim, of course, referred to as many Rishonim understand this to mean Shluchim. Of course, Rashi comments Malachim Mamish. A very famous Rashi, which I'm not going to comment on right now. Arza Seyus Ve'adom. By Yitzav Losom Leymor, he instructs them to say the following. Kosam Mum Ladoni Ve'esav, Ko Amar Abdecha Yaakov, Mlavon Garti, Vo'echar Adota. The content of the instruction that Yaakov delivers to the messengers is, tell Esav, he calls him Adoni, my master, Ko Amar Abdecha Yaakov, this is what your servant Yaakov said, I live with Lavan and I was delayed till now. Now you notice, of course, right away, Yaakov is speaking to Esav in very, I would say, terms of obeisance. O-B-E-I-S-A-N-C-E. Almost kowtowing to Esav in some respects. He calls him Adoni, my master, your servant, Yaakov, Abdecha Yaakov. And he tells him about what happened with Lavan. There's a famous Rashi. I assume you're familiar with Rashi. Im Lavan garti, v'tayag mitzvah shamarti. Why in heaven's name should Esav care about that? Don't forget, there's been a hiatus in the relationship between Yaakov and Esav. Their number of years has passed from the time that Yaakov and Esav left each other. Esav wanted to kill Yaakov, if you remember, after the sale of the birthright. And now Yaakov is making a valiant effort to, shall we say, effect a rapprochement with Esav, a reconciliation. And he sends him divrei pius. And Yaakov is also alluding to a number of items that hopefully, I imagine, why is Yaakov telling this otherwise? He says, Lavan garti, tayar mitzvah shamarti. By the way, the word garti, I assume you know, garti is lashon tayag. That's already mentioned by Rashi, points this out, osios tayag. And therefore, if you remember earlier, if you look in Perek Chaf Zayin, the end of Parshas Tovos, Perek Chaf Zayin, Pasuk Mem, what is Yaakov telling this to Laban for? Because if you recall earlier, when Esav proclaims his hatred for Yaakov after the bracha, so we know what happened, that Rivka advises Yaakov, and actually Yitzchak is the one who tells him, go to Padena Aram. But take a look for a moment in Perek Chaf Zayin Pasuk Mem. Because Yitzchak still gave Esav a bracha. What was the bracha that Yitzchak gave to Esav? Take a look in Pesukim Lama Tesemen. He named Yishmani Haaretz Yeh Moshevecha. It's on pagination here, page 64. Umitala Shemayim Me'ol V'Alchar V'Chatichi. He told him, you're going to live by the sword. V'Yasachich HaTavod. You're going to serve your brother. V'Yon Kasher Torid U'Farakta Ulo Me'al Tzavarecha. Translate those Pesukim. V'Yon Kasher Torid. When you...
Grieve.
I'm sorry?
Grieve.
How do you translate Tori?
Grieve.
Grieve. What does that mean?
To be sad for
death. Mourn.
Mourn.
Grieve.
Grieve.
G-R-I-E-V. Ah, when you grieve. I missed it. I'm sorry. Vayor kasher Tori means basically you're translating as Rashi does. Lashon Tsar. What does that mean? It says Rashi. Kloma sheyavu Yisrael ala Torah. When Klal Yisrael violate the Torah, don't observe the Torah, don't observe the mitzvahs. V'yi alecha pischon peh v'hitztar ala bracha shenotal. Then ufarak ta'ulo mi'al tzavarecha. Then what will happen? Translate the last four words here. Then you shall ufarak ta'ulo. Ulo, of course, refers to the yoke. Me'al tzavarecha from your neck. Means what's going to happen when Klal Yisrael no longer observe the Torah? That's when Esav has an opportunity to go ahead, shall we say, and prevail. So it could be that that's what Rashi in Vayishlach is referring to. That's why he tells Esav, in love on Garti, The Tayag Mitzvah Shamati. That is to say that you have no chance to prevail over me. And therefore it's kedai for you to reconcile yourself with me and not to go to war against me. You hear what I'm saying? Now Chazal tell us that the Ramban actually refers to this issue right here. The Ramban comments, it's a medrash actually, based on the pasuk of Mishlei. The medrash tells us that there was a tviya against Yaakov Avinu. Namely, Yaakov Avinu was taken to task. He should not have sent malachim, angels, according to Rashi, or shulchan, emissaries, according to others, to appease Esau. Chazal say that this connects us with the pasuk in Mishlei in Perek Chavav. Machzik vozne keled al rib lo lo. Over misaber al rib lo lo. Which means that you are walking on your merry way and there is a dog walking, let's say, on the other side of the street and you're walking in your merry way. The dog is walking on his merry way. You decide to go ahead and grab the ears of the dog. So what is the dog going to do? The dog will respond and react by yelping. That's the correct term. The dog will respond and react in some form or fashion, either barking or perhaps even chas v'shalom, attempting to bite you. So Chazal say that's exactly the situation that happened here. Yaakov and Esav left each other many years ago. Esav is dormant. Yaakov is going on his merry way. Esav on his merry way. Why did Yaakov suddenly feel, Vayishlach Yaakov, Malachim Mefarav, Esav Lachim, Hatzasteh, Esteh Adam? Who asked him? Why are you being maksik, Biazne Keller? Let the dog, Shvatir, as the term is in Yiddish, let him take a tiyul, let him go for a tiyul?
A
walk, a trip. Don't get involved with it. Esav is now in Sde Adam. He's not pursuing you. Why are you sending shlichim to reconcile with him? It's only going to, shall we say, arouse his ire. And once again, there'll be rancor. It's like Machzik Vozne Keller. That's what Chazal said. The Ramban has a very interesting yisod. The Ramban says, that is true. But once Yaakov Avinu acts the way he does, then it becomes part of what? Maisa Ovo, similar body. Mind-boggling Ramban. Whatever the Ovos do, Ramban comments on this in Lech Lecha, repeats this idea many, many times, that we have to use the model of the Ovos in order to know how to behave. You're probably familiar with the Ramban. I assume you're familiar with this Ramban who comments that during different times of Jewish history, you probably know, for example, during the period when the Roman Empire was really essentially dominating the entire world, so we often had to send emissaries to the Roman government in order to deal with, unfortunately, many, many gzeirot that they decreed against us, against the Jewish people, and that's what we did. Based on what model? Based on the model of Yaakov Avinu. That's the Ramban. My service, same with the Bani. So even though it wasn't the ideal thing to do, maybe I'll just give you an example of Pasuk in Dvarim. Look at the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. You're undoubtedly familiar with the beginning of Dvarim. In the second parak of Dvarim, you have the Torah describes how Moshe Rabbeinu interacted with Sichon. The Torah says in Parak Beis Pasuk Abdalim. If you have a Chumash, you undoubtedly have it. So take a look over there. It's on page 438 in the pagination of this Chumash. Maybe we'll read the Pesuk in the beginning. It says, Vaydaber Hashem Elai Nemo, Hashem told me, this is when the Sefer Dvarim, as you know, reviews the history of Klal Yisrael, going into Eretz Yisrael, and the like. And so Moshe Rabbeinu is told by Hashem in the beginning of Perek Beis, Pasuk Yitzayin, Ato Ver Hayom, Esgavul Moav, you're about to pass, go through the country of Moav, Karapta Mul B'nei Amon, Al Titzurim, Al Tiskabam, don't start up with them, Don't get involved with them. I'm not going to let you conquer Ammon. Why? You know Ammon and Moab? You remember Lot? His two daughters, Ammon and Moab, they were born from an incestuous relationship. So here Hashem says you can't start up with them. And the Torah goes on to describe how we have giants living in Eretz Yisrael. And then Pasuk Chavez, Kasher Asal Ne'esu Hayoshim B'Seir. Again, similar, if you remember, we weren't allowed to start up with Seir either, because that's Esav. These are from individuals from the family, obviously related to Yaakov Avinu. And now Pasuk Avdalah. Kumu Se'u B'Ibru Esnachal Anon Reino Sati B'Yotcha Sichom Melech Heshman Ha'amori V'Yasar Tzohoch El Rosh V'Hisgarbo Milchama. What does that mean? V'Hisgarbo Milchama. That's a very striking language. Is what should you do? V'Hisgarbo Milchama. What does it sound like? Hashem tells him regarding Sichom, what should you do?
Provoke.
I'm sorry?
Provoke.
It sounds like that. But now take a look at the psukim that the Torah has in Perek Chavav. Look a bit later. In Perek Chavav. No, not the Perek Chavav. I'm sorry. Psukim Chavav. I meant in Perek Beis again. I'm sorry. In Perek Beis, Psukim Chavav Chavzayim. Yeah, that's what I meant. Right after that, what does the Torah tell us he did? What did he do, Moshe Rabbeinu? He sent shluchim to Sichon. He sent shluchim. Let me traverse through your land. Means I'll purchase water, I'll purchase food. Let me traverse your land. Sichon said no, but shum pan ba'ofen ki ik shasham ol kach azvucho v'imetz azavavo l'man sita v'yalcho ayom azeh. Means the problem is if Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to go v'hisgarbo milchama that you just mentioned in Pasuk Avdalid, so why is Moshe Rabbeinu sending overtures of peace in Pasuk Avav? You have a question? Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu v'hisgarbo milchama to fight with him, to provoke him as you described it. A moment later, Veshlach Malachi, Moshe Rabbeinu was sending over to the peace, Divrei Shalom. The answer, of course, is Lichora, that if you start to speak with Sichon about Divrei Shalom, what's going to emerge? Milchama. I would compare it to another wonderful country not far from us that's involved in developing nuclear weaponry. They just love us immensely. They're known as the Iranians. When you attempt to speak with them about peace, what will emerge is just war. Anyway, the Ramban, going back to the Ramban. So the Ramban here in Vayishlach has an issue with Yaakov Avinu, that Yaakov Avinu was, shall we say, totally subordinate to Esav, as I mentioned in the very beginning. He used the language of Adoni Esav, Kamar Abdecha Yaakov. He's speaking to him with obeisance, almost as if Yaakov Avinu literally is completely descending. And this, as a result, Maisa Ava Simon Labanim, again, the Ramban discusses it right over here. So if Yaakov Avinu, says the Ramban, going to lower himself before Esav, what will that precipitate? That many, many years later, the Roman government will prevail over Klal Yisrael. We will become their indentured servants. All this is part of Maisa Ava Simon Labanim. That's what the Ramban writes over here. It's not Cheney, as I said, once Yaakov behaves this way, we also have to behave this way. And that's why, whenever Rebbe, Abir Al-Nossi, the author, the redactor of the Mishnah, whenever he had to go ahead and deal with the Roman government, so he would examine this parsha, the parsha by Yishlach, to see, to find Ramazim in ways how to go ahead and deal with the Roman government. Very interesting that Menachem Begin, Zichron Lebracha, the Prime Minister of the State of Israel, anyone ever heard of that name? We are presently in the State of Israel. I don't know if some of you are aware of it. I hope so. We're no longer in Flatbush or in Deal. That's for the Sfaradim. Or in L.A. or in Great Neck or in Chicago or in Teaneck. We are now in Eretz Yisrael. And so Menachem Begin, who's the Prime Minister, he actually made a peace treaty with a fellow named Sadat, Anwar Sadat, the Prime Minister of Egypt. Many years ago, we have actually a kind of cold peace with Egypt. stayed in Israel for the last many, many years. Before he made that peace agreement, Menachem Begin went to meet with several Gedolei Yisrael. Amazing. Menachem Begin actually is from Brisk. If I'm not mistaken, he is Mesadik Kedushin, or his father Mesadik Kedushin, was a Briskov. It's an amazing thing. I heard this from Rav Soloveitchik. Anyway, the Rav knew Menachem Begin from Brisk, or he knew his family from Brisk. And so first Menachem Begin met on the Lower East Side in the home of Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal before he came to this agreement with Anwar Sadat with the following Gedolei Yisrael. There's a famous picture. Matter of fact, he believed he also met with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Chassadim Zibracha, but he met with several Gedolei Yisrael. In Rav Moshe Feinstein's home, he met with Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yaakov Kavaletsky, Harav Hutner, Harav Ruderman, Gedolei Olam. And then he met with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Gedolei Olam. And then he met with whom? With Rav Soloveitchik, except he wanted to go to Boston. And the Rav couldn't hear of it. The Prime Minister of the State of Israel? The Gemara said, Nichan Shechol can cover the Malchus, he's the Melech. At the end, don't worry. He outsmarted the Rav and came to Boston. To meet Rav Soloveitchik. Why am I telling you this? All these Gedolim, every single one, Kolel, Rav Soloveitchik, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the four Gedolim who sat in Rav Moshe Feinstein's home in the Lower East Side, what did they tell Menachem Begin to do before he met Sadat? To study a certain parsha. Which parsha? Vayishlach. Isn't it amazing? They all told him the same thing. As the expression goes, great minds think alike. And the Ramban is the one who alludes to this. Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, is the man of Yisrael in his generation. And so he would study this parsha before he met with the members of the Roman government. And apparently, the Chazal tell us, it's a Medrash, I think in Bereishis Rabba. I'm fairly certain it's in Bereishis Rabba. That tells us that once he did not look into the Parsha, and apparently some harm occurred. Because my service, him in the moment, that's where the Ramban lays down this klal, a very important klal that we should be familiar with. So despite the fact that Yaakov Avinu attempts to reconcile with Esau, there's something very significant here. And this really is a very important lesson for all of us, especially those who live in Chutz Aretz, in terms of our interaction with non-Jews, with nations of the world. So Yaakov here attempts to reconcile with Esau, but Yaakov also at the same time maintains a certain distance. It's true, he sends to Esau Divrei Shalom, he sends him words of overtures of peace and the like. However, if you remember, here in look in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Yaakov, of course, sends presents, as you remember, all types of presents to Esav. And the Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayokim Balaylahu, Vayikach Eshtei Noshe, Eshtei Shivchosu, Vasachad Asay Yolod, he takes actually his two wives, the two shvachos, his 11 children, Vayavar Es Ma'avar Yabok. So Chazal asked, where was Dina? So what did Chazal answer? Rashi quotes it. He put her in a box. And he closed the box in order that Esav should not set his eyes upon her. In other words, basically, what is Yaakov Avinu's position? Okay, we have to, shall we say, try to effect a reconciliation with this Shegetz. Do you know what that word means? Sfaradi Tahor, that you are? The word Shegetz, anyone know what that term means? No, that's the word Sheretz. Shegetz is a kind of Yiddish expression. Correct. For someone who's a, shall we say, of that, thank you. But someone who is clearly not Peseder. He was not Esau, whatever his status was, one second. But obviously, he's not going to become a mechutn with Esau. That's certainly not. That's why he takes Dina and puts her in a box. That's my point is, and Chazal, by the way, say that Yaakov was punished for that. Do you remember? Chazal tell us that Yaakov was punished. Rashi quotes it over here. that he prevented her, Dina, from marrying Esau, because maybe she would have been mekarev him, and he would have, shall we say, been kama chayzer b'tshuva. And as a result, what happened to Dina? Whose hands does she fall into? Shechem ben Hamor, which was considerably, obviously, far more horrific, because Esau at least underwent the bris milah. And Shechem, well, you know what happened over there, the entire story. By the way, there's a very famous comment, one second, the famous comment of the Alto Sabotkin. Alto Sabotkin was a great Bali Musa. You know the Alto Sabotkin. What was his name? Thank you. Nosson C. Finkel. So he asked the following question. What? That's the halacha? I have to marry off my daughter to a Shegetz? To a Russia? If you have such a shidduch, some would suggest, for your daughter to marry such a personality, and based on what? Your daughter will be mekarev him. Would you go ahead and, shall we say, move forward with that idea? We'll ask Mendel. I think it says in my Gemara that you have to look for a daughter who's a Bas Tam Chacham, a Tzaddik, and not to marry a daughter to a Rasha, because she might be mekarev him and he'll do tshuva. One second. So the Alto Sabotka answers, let me just say the answer, then he wants to say something as well. So the Alto Sabotka answers, he says, Yaakov acted correctly. No question, he should not have given Dina to Esav, undoubtedly. But Yaakov should have been very troubled by this. He should have been pained by the fact that somehow he was not in a position to give Dina over to Esav. And he should not have, the way he said it, he should have closed the box so tightly. That's the lashon I heard from my rabbi in the name of the Alto Sabotka. And basically what he's saying is that Hashem is bedaktik matzadik in kichut asayra. It's a gemara in Yevamos. You probably know that gemara. So therefore Yaakov was punished because in effect it should have troubled him immensely, enormously, that he cannot marry off his daughter to Esau. Let me just make one more thing before you both of you speak, and that is that if you remember here Bereishis Chavzayin, and told us last week's parsha, 2 weeks ago rather, we find in the brachas when Esau comes back. If you remember when Esau reveals that Yaakov, that Yitzchak rather gives a bracha to Yaakov and not to him? What is he saying? Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayitzak Tzaoka Gidolo Morad Maot. And say Chazal say Yaakov is punished. What was the punishment? That the children of Esau subsequently they caused the children of Yaakov also to scream a loud cry. When was that loud cry heard? Where was it found in Tanakh? Shushan Abira, thank you. Haman HaGogi, from the descendants of Esav, was going to Mordechai HaTzadik, Vayizak, Zokov, Dolo, Marad, Maod. So even though Yaakov Avinu acted correctly, because Rivka told him in Nevuah, that's what the Targum Unkelos says, what to do? Look at Unkelos over here in Perich HaVzai, in Pasuk Gimel, and he listened to his mother, and Chazal also tell us that the Yaakov was very, very frightened about fooling his father. So why is he punished? The answer is because he should have been pained by the fact that somehow that Esav is now, shall we say, jarred, and it should have really troubled him. And Hashem takes everything in his cheshbon. It means essentially, it's true we have to have some sort of a distance from the non-Jewish world. And I just mentioned our Soloveitchik's famous. You saw that he said in the Pasuk in Chayzari, you're probably familiar with it, I imagine. Avraham Avinu tells Ephraim, Ger Matoshav Anochi Imochem. Of course, it's an oxymoron right there. How can you be a Ger and a Toshav at the same time? What is a Ger? A Ger is a stranger. And a Toshav is a settler, someone who lives there. How can you be both? Of course, the answer is, in brisk dialectic fashion, Sveidinen. No problem at all. When it comes to your own destiny, your own values, your own religion, your own observance, you are obviously a ger. You're totally different than the non-Jewish world. But in terms of your interaction with the non-Jewish world, certainly you're allowed to interact with the non-Jewish world. On the contrary, you have what to contribute to the non-Jewish world, to civilization and the like, so one has to be both a ger and a toshav. So here, Yaakov Avinu is sort of caught betwixt and between, and this is where Chazal take him to task. And that's what the Alta Sabotka says, that he should have been bitzah, that he's not able to give his daughter over to Esau. Okay, first one, there are two here, and then Alex, go ahead.
So why was Dina punished if it was Yaakov who really was transgressed the issue?
What do you mean Dina was punished?
She was the one that had to suffer and go with, you know, Yaakov obviously had sorry because his daughter was captive and he was worried, but really the punishment was more that Dina was.
Rashi asked the Akasha. I assume you're aware of the Rashi. Rashi al Torah has to be learned every single Rashi with a fine-tooth comb. What does the pasuk say? Vatetze Dina Basleya, this week's parasha. Perek Lamadala Pasuk Aleph, it's still there. Vatetze Dina, page 82. Vatetze Dina Basleya Sheyolda Leyakov Liros Bivnos Haaretz. What do Chazal see in that pasuk? Look in Rashi. Vatetze Dina. She's called Basleya. Why not Bas Yaakov? Says Rashi. Al Shem Yitziyasa Nikreis Basleya. Shafi Yotzonis Hoysa. Shenemar Vatetze Leya Likroso. What does it mean, Yotzonis? The word Vatetze is a striking word. Yisrael. Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Shava Vayel Charana. Last week's parsha. Rashi says over there, Yitzias Tzadik Ben Amakom Meisir Roshen. Pana Ziva, Pana Hoida, Pana Adora. Remember the Rashi? Of course you do. He knows all the Rashi, so you'll discuss it with him. What does that mean when a Tzadik leaves Amakom? Guess what? It's a terrible loss. A gaping hole. Pana Ziva, Pana Hoida, Pana Adora. So the word Vayetze over there is obviously something which is very much very fitting. But here, what's about Tetze Dina Basleya? Where did she go out from? By the way, this word occurs a number of times in Chumash. I assume you're familiar with all the usages in Chumash. You should be. That's the idea of learning Shnayim Mikra Vecha Targum. And according to some, Rashi can be in place of, in Kom, but still you should learn the Targum and Rashi if you don't mind. That's G'day. Do you remember the Pasuk in Pashas Emor? Of course you do. Because you remember all this. The Torah says at the end of Emor, and I just show you that pasuk as well, page 310, Perek Avdala Pasuk Yud, then we'll come back to this and answer your question, if you don't mind. Perek Avdala Pasuk Yud in Emor, Vayetze Ben Isha Yisraelis. What is the nature of that statement? By the way, Rashi asks from Chazal, Meichon Yotza. Where did he come from? It's also a striking pasuk. The Torah doesn't tell us who it is. The son of a Jewish woman goes out. Vehu ben ish mitzvi, and his father was an Egyptian. Vayinotzim b'machane, there's some sort of divisiveness between who and whom. Ben ha-Yisraelis, the son of the Jewish woman, v'ish ha-Yisraeli, and the Jewish man. Wow, that tells you a lot. What's the Vayetze? Normally the term Vayetze is used, as I just mentioned. Vayetze Yaakov, Be'er, then I understand, you leave a city. Vayetze, what's the Vayetze over here? And what is the Vatetze over here? So Chazal say, Yotzonis I saw. She was what? What does it mean, Yotzonis?
Yes.
She was curious. Or even flirtatious would be a better term. Chazal, say this. I can't say it. That's the reason why she was punished. Okay, I can't describe it now because it's a separate discussion. And that's, if you are familiar with the Sefer Yemezi Karom of Rav Soloveitchik, which I hope you'll become familiar with, there's an essay on this topic. The essay contrasts two personalities. I assume, Alex, you probably read that essay, hopefully. It contrasts Rachel and Leah, the distinction between Rachel and Leah, the two totally different personalities, and obviously Dina is the daughter of whom? Daughter of Leah. And Leah also has these elements of Yotzanis. Rashi quotes it right here on this pasuk, namely, I can't discuss it right now because I can't talk about Kol HaTorah Kula, Regalachas. It's very hard. I don't have that capacity. Only people in this yeshiva do. When they ask questions of Kol HaTorah Kula, they expect you in 3.5 seconds to answer the question. I don't have that capacity. Mendel, maybe you'll explain it to them. But anyway, I'm back over here. So, Gevur Toshav Anochi Yimachem, I said a moment ago. So, the relationship between ourselves and the non-Jewish world is very tensile. That's the proper term. Yisrael, you understand that. There's a tensile balance between, on the one hand, maintaining our distinct way of life, on the other hand, interacting with the world at large in terms of what we can interact. That's what Rav Soloveitchik's point was, and that's exactly, I believe, the second yisod that's found over here in the psukim with reference to Yaakov Avinu. By the way, this is relevant, as you can imagine, to many, many issues. We are unfortunately and tragically suffering from such assimilation. And unquestionably, as you know, we try our best to really, wherever we live, let's say in England or in the United States, doesn't make a difference where it is. On the one hand, we want our best to try to, shall we say, have a wholesome interaction with the non-Jewish world. We don't want wars, we're not looking for any kind of divisiveness. On the other hand, we don't want to become too close to them, because obviously familiarity can sometimes, Rachmanel and son, engender assimilation, acculturation, all types of things that we want to try to avoid. It's a very, as I said, sensitive balance between the two. And it's not simple. If you know, you're undoubtedly aware that in Europe, actually, where Jews were terribly persecuted, and we lost all our rights to a large extent, and when, shall we say, emancipation came, and that brought Jews, Baruch Hashem, many, many rights, and that's when the Haskalah began. That's when we began to simulate the non-Jewish world and simulate non-Jewish values and non-Jewish mores and non-Jewish culture. And unfortunately, to a large extent today, that's what's happened. Namely, what kind of music do many young people listen to?
Hebrew.
Non-Jewish music. And most non-Jewish music, even though I don't really consider the music of today to be music, most of it is pure cacophony. A lot of noise, what I could see. To me, even Jewish music is cacophony. So, but non-Jewish music, and we are exposed to non-Jewish, unfortunately, literature, and we're exposed to non-Jewish values and mores and culture and what have you, and that leads to assimilation, etc. Matter of fact, you remember in Europe, they stopped speaking Hebrew. What did the early Reformed Jews wanted to do? They wanted to introduce German, as opposed to Lashon HaKodesh. And they introduced German, and as a result, it led to terrible assimilation. And today, the problem, of course, is assimilation and acculturation and intermarriage, which is mind-boggling. And I can say, where people show me from time to time that the issue of Nisoi Tarovet is absolutely Oyam Menorah. It's beyond belief. Sometimes you have, at a wedding ceremony, performed by a rabbi and a priest, in unison. What in heaven's name is going on? That the rabbi represents the Tanach Hasan and the priest represents the Tanach Kala, or something along those lines, Achmanu Litzlan. And here also you have in the encounter between Yaakov and Esav, we have, as you know, prior to that, the Sar Shel Esav wrestles with Yaakov, Kol HaLaila. You know, there's a song that I go to Chassidus and they sing the song. I never understood this. I don't know if you go to weddings. Maybe? There's a niggun that they sing all the time the last 10 years. How does the niggun go? Vayeyovek ishimo ala los hashacha. You obviously don't go to many weddings. What? No, that's not the niggun though. That's the right, those are the right words. The niggun goes. That's it. Adalosa losa shaka. Ma inyat shmita itzar Sinai. What does that have to do with a wedding? Could you explain that to me, Daniel? I, for the life of me, don't understand that connection. I'm being honest. I just don't understand the connection. So here the Pasuk says, in Bereshis Lamed Beis, and look over here for a moment, Chavav, you know what happened, that the hand of Yaakov Avinu, actually, he seems to be prevailing, Kisarisa Melokim Yimanoshim Atuchal, and then the Malach goes ahead, and what does he do? He's no Gia B'Kathiyarech Yaakov, Vateka, Lamed Beis Chavav, Vateka Kathiyarech Yaakov Be'Avko Yivo, in the wrestling match, so what happens? Yaakov's sciatic nerve, Giranoshe, is moved out of place. What's the remez to everything I just said? Namely, the remez is that unfortunately there's going to be fallout in Klal Yisrael. What's the fallout going to be? Rachman Lassan, assimilation, acculturation, intermarriage, etc., etc. Those who leave the Derech of Yaakov Avinu, that's the consequence of the fact that the Malach went ahead and impacted the Kaf Yerech of Yaakov, and not all of us will become, shall we say, remain Neman to Hashem Yisbarach. Of course, we hope everyone will be Chozer B'Tshuva when?
Before you was Mashiach.
That's right, Sheyala Ashacha. But the fact of the matter is that because of this, Al Kain Malach Malaysov Gira Noshe, Asher Al Kaf Yerech Arayom Azeh. And somehow the Malach actually was Matzliach to somehow penetrate, or if you will, bring Tumah to the house of Yaakov Avinu, we can't need to get Anoshe because of what happened over here. So I just want to mention, and the whole idea of this discussion was simply to really sensitize us a little bit, I think that's what the Torah is doing over here, to the describing the relationship or the tensile balance between Yaakov and Umos HaOlam, and that's exactly how we have to be exceptionally careful. On the one hand, Mitzad Echad, we have to be Ohavei Shalom, Rofi Shalom. Unquestionably, we have to live with our neighbors and live with them peacefully, similar to Aaron HaKohen, Mitzad Sheini. Sometimes we have to fight for the Kedusha of Am Yisrael, and that is not a simple matter. I just want to, for the last few moments, just comment on another item that I mentioned earlier, and that is that Rashi, on that passage that I mentioned to you earlier, namely, where Yaakov, in effect, sends Shluchim and tells Esav, "Im Lavan Garti, Va'echa Arata." I live with Lavan, I stayed there until now. So Rashi offers two explanations why Yaakov mentioned the time they spent with Lavan. The second explanation, the one I just mentioned before, "Im Lavan Garti, V'tayg Mitzvah Shamarti," which means that obviously, what is Yaakov saying? That it was a time of great challenges and all the problems and difficulties I had to deal with Lavan. He exchanged Rachel for Leah. He was dishonest in paying my wages. Rashi said, he fooled me over 100 times. Rashi quotes this in Chumash. But Yaakov didn't give up. Yaakov did not waver for a moment. Yaakov continued to observe all the mitzvahs, all the commandments, never forsaking the tradition that he had from his... And same later on, take a look now in Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Yud Ches. Here, after Yaakov's encounter with Esau, the Pasuk says, Vayobo Yaakov Sholem Ir Shechem. So what does Rashi say on the Pasuk of Sholem? Sholem Migufo, Sholem Mamono, Sholem Mitaraso. Whole in body, whole in his possessions, whole in his Torah. Once again, Yaakov is a kind of survivor. And as Yaakov was able to maintain his exemplary spiritual level despite the fact that all these things could have brought him down. So I once heard from my Rebbe, Hagoy Lavan Lichsin Zatzal, the following. He had a very beautiful, I think very insightful comment on this. He said, how should we view Yaakov Avinu? During all the years that followed his flight from his parents' home, did he simply maintain his spiritual level? He didn't progress. If you remember here in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph, prior to his encounter with Esau, the Torah records his tefillah. He said, Kiva makli avati es ha'adein hazeh, with my staff alone I crossed the Yarden, v'ato ha'isi l'shnei machanos, I've become two whole camps. So here we have a change that took place in Yaakov Avinu's life. A situation where he was a fleeing bachelor, and within a couple of decades he acquired a large family, a lot of wealth. So is that possible to compare that situation as a single person who was persecuted, arriving in Laban's home, compared with his situation now? V'ato ha'isi l'shnei machanos, now I've become two camps. And when the Torah tells us that he came Sholem to the city of Shechem, it means more than simply he had not fallen in a spiritual level, as Rashi says. There's a great difference between a person who didn't fall in a spiritual level and a person who was Sholem. What does Sholem mean? Someone who progresses to the highest of levels, not just managing to preserve your existing level. So when we're introduced to Yaakov, it's very interesting that the Torah calls him, in the very beginning, if you remember, Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Aholim. Has the Targum translate Ishtam Gavra Shlim, a Gavra Shole. Yaakov is Tam. But he's someone who sits in the tent. He has no idea how to survive the world outside. But there's one pasuk that describes Yaakov's personality in the clearest possible terms. When Rivka urges him to steal the bracha, what does she tell him? Olai kilascha b'ni. I will handle all the curses. And these words present Yaakov as someone who's unable to bear responsibility for his own actions. Rivka persuades him to steal the bracha. She says, I'll assume responsibility. The curse will be on me. Notice the Yaakov who lives in Yitzhak's house, my Rebbe said, is not capable of assuming responsibility. Rivka has to do it for him. But during the years that passed, till Parshas Vayishlach over here, Yaakov not only studied in the Beis Medrash of Shem Be'era, as you mentioned, but also passed through the Beis Medrash of Laban and Esav. It's also a Beis Medrash. And in that Beis Medrash of the big wide world, he learned to take responsibility for his actions. He learned to deal with real life outside the tent. His marriage to Rachel forced him to Leah with deception of Laban. He earns his living through many years of hard work. He stands up to Esav's army. He emerges victorious. That's the Yaakov that we meet in our parasha is a totally different Yaakov Avinu. But it's Yaakov Avinu whose Shavashim are anchored in the Beis Medrash of Shem Be'eber. So why do I say this to you? Baruch Hashem, you are young, vibrant, energetic, spirited, and you, thank God, Baruch Hashem, at this point in your life, are in the Beis Medrash of Shem Be'eber, which is a golden opportunity to develop Torah values and the Torah Hashkafa and the way one should look at the world, and as well how to interact with non-Jews, how to interact with the world at large. A lot of what the world at large has to offer is, I would say, considerably repugnant to us. That means we should not absorb it osmotically. We should not, shall we say, necessarily accept their values. And the reason why we are involved in the study of Torah is in order to know how to behave, how to interact with the world at large. But at the end of the day, we have to enter the world at large. But hopefully, if you enter the world at large with tremendous knowledge of Torah, with tremendous commitment to Hashem Yisbarach, with Dveikus Hashem, there's no question, we'll also be able to say, just as Yaakov said, Im Lavan Garti V'Tag Mitzvah Shamarti, we'll also be able to say that even though we lived in the world at large, but the Shavashim that we developed in the world of Torah, and the connection that we have to that which we have to offer, that is what gave us the ability, Emetz Hashem, to not just maintain our fealty to Hashem Yisbarach, but also to remain Shalom, but not just to remain Shalom, but even to grow as a result of our interaction with the world at large, and be able to meet the world at large the way Yaakov Avinu met it, and also to emerge as he did, Vayavo Yaakov Shalom. All of us, Emetz Hashem, should be zochet to become mushrosh in the world of Torah as many years as we possibly can, which means our entire life, Adnev Yesim Shana, and ultimately as a result of that, be shalom begufa, begufeinu, bimamoneinu, ubetarasenu. There's no reason.